is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
We are continuing this week with our topic on water. Al Dahlstrand, a retired mining engineer, is also a UCCE Master Gardener of Tuolumne County, and he is giving a presentation on water conservation. Enjoy!
What can we do about our water shortage? And that's just two things: wise use in the home and careful planning and use by, in not only in our landscape, but wise use in public planning. And we've seen a lot of that being pushed in the local counties. We also have seen it in the state, but we've seen some political things happening, and we'll talk about it kind of at the end, that are concerning to a lot of people, and some of it's not really well based on science, and too much based on politics. But those are the kind of things that we need to be aware of as citizens all the time. Not only aware of what we do, but what our public agencies do, local county agencies as well as state agencies and national agencies. Let's go to the next one. Quickly, a lot of the water management techniques that we can use at home, I'm sure you've all seen most of these. Minimize car washing, cover your pool and spa, it just cuts the evaporation. Fill your washers and dishwashers before you use it and clean them. Use water-saving appliances and toilets. One of the past managers of Tuolumne Utilities District told me that one of the biggest water waste that they have seen in people's homes are running toilets. You talked about that the other day too. Yes?
I've never seen the one on filling washers and dishwashers before you use. What does that mean?
Fill them all the way up before you use them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you had water. Okay.
No, yeah. Just make sure you got them full. Lots of stuff in there that needs cleaning.
Yeah.
My wife and I, a number of years ago, we started, not about this time of year, we started putting a bucket in the shower when the water's warming up so we could take it out and use it on some deserving plants. It's amazing the amount of water that you can collect that way. But lots of these little things that you can do, turning off the water for brushing teeth and washing hands. Let's go to the next one. Landscape water management, that's a big one since it's roughly 50% of all the water we use in our homes. I've gone to drip type irrigation systems instead of overhead sprinkling, almost completely except for four little parts that I've got on a lawn and amongst some fruit trees. Reducing lawn size or replacing lawn with drought tolerant plants, that's another presentation we'll have a little later. We'll talk about that in more detail. And increasing the use of native and drought tolerant plants. Water deeply and less often. Mulch, always mulch. Recontouring yards for rainwater infiltration with swales and low points. Using, where we can, impervious materials for walks and driveways. Gray water use where it's feasible, and then consider rainwater collection. Very soon, next one, we're gonna go into rainwater collection now. This is a way to supplement water for irrigation use. And that's all my wife and I do here with our home system. We've been collecting rainwater since 1989, and we've gradually graduated from these size tanks to a little bit bigger tanks and more of them. But this is a type of technique to collect rainwater that not everybody can afford. We were lucky enough to get into it because I I worked at the Jamestown Mine, and I knew a lot of the guys over at the Mine and Angels Camp and Carson Hill. And when they shut down, they were getting rid of a lot of their old tanks. And I picked up these three tanks for nothing. There were some old cyanide tanks that they were using that they rinsed out real well. So we picked these up and a couple of other little tanks, and that's how we launched ourselves into it. Let's go to the next one. And so we piped that into our downspouts and gutters, and there's an old coffee can and a flex tube going into an 1.5-inch pipe down the side of the garage. Next one. And the next one, that's just the pipe going down the side of the garage. Let's go to the next one. And this is where it comes into some open top tanks. I've got these tanks covered with plywood, so you know the small critters aren't going to get in there and drown. And it also holds down on algae and leaf litter in there too. And then this is just the debris catchment out of screens. Next one. And this is the inflow pipe here going in, and then there's an overflow pipe coming out here. These tanks are all connected at the bottom, or two of them are connected at the bottom. Let's go to the next one. These are connected here, and then these are connected. These tanks already had pre-drilled holes and all kinds of attachments to them, so I just used what was available and hooked them up. And these three tanks and one other one started us out with about maybe 12 or 1400 gallons of capacity, and then we'd use it on our plants during the dry parts of the late winter and the dry parts of the early spring when it wasn't raining. And then they'd be replenished and filled back up with the later spring rains. So typically, in a typical year on our rainwater collection system, which is now up to about 4,500 gallons, we'll use about double of that every year. Because typically, we haven't seen it this year, but typically in January, February, or March, we'll hit 2 or 3 weeks of really dry weather where, you know, with the fruit trees budding out, I think, it's been dry for 2.5 weeks. I got to start getting some water on them. So guess where it comes from, mm-hmm. These tanks. Yes?
For rainwater collection, do you have to worry about tin roof?
No, not for the plants.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I know a lady down in with the Master Gardener organization down in Mariposa that she and her husband live out in the hills someplace, and they don't even have I don't even think they have a well. They have 16,000 gallons of rainwater capacity, and half of it's for potable water and half of it's for irrigation water. And they have tin roofs or painted metal, treated metal roofs. But they have to, the potable water tanks, they have to treat those so it's drinkable. So they have another problem there.
By treated, you mean galvanized?
No, it's chlorinated water.
Treated, you said?
Treated water.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
I didn't mean the metal was treated.
Okay.
But the it was a modern metal roof where it's probably the baked on enamel or paint
mm-hmm.
on it.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one. And this is from our patio, just looking at where the tanks were. They've all got lids on them. And fortunately, we had a place to kind of hide them over the bank, so. Let's go to the next one. This is the downspout on the other end. Next slide. This is a little tank on the other end of the house. I've replaced this tank with another 500-gallon tank, and this little 120-gallon one is down at an outbuilding we've got sitting off a corner of it now. But this is just the piping going under the steps and over to the tank. Let's go to the next one. And this is one of our original tanks that are relocated to our shop area and just have a downspout. This earlier slide showed the water going into a screen to screen out the leaf debris and all mm-hmm. the junk. And I made, since then, most of our tanks, except for three, I just make a debris bucket. I take a plastic bucket and 1.5-inch pipe. And then I put an 1.5-inch male and female fittings and maybe a wooden gasket like this has in it together, and I screw them together by hand. it's tight, and then the top half of the pipe I drill full of holes. So when the water goes, discharges off the roof into here, it fills up the bottom, and then it fills up half the bucket before it starts flowing through the holes and into the tank. And that's to collect all the debris. And then about once a month, you just pull these off, empty all the, you know, sludge, and don't leave it in there too long because it'll make you gag sometimes. But that's just a, you know, simple debris bucket for $5 worth of parts. They're easy to build, and they're very effective. Next slide. Yeah, that's a picture of it, what it looks like. Yeah. Okay, next one. I got these three tanks to replace the others. And what I did is about, I think it was about 2008 when we put those tanks in at the demo garden. And I was looking for rainwater tanks that we could put in our demo garden to talk to the public about. And I found five tanks, these three and two bigger ones, at Poly Processing in French Camp. They're a tank manufacturer. And I told them I was looking for some used or damaged tanks. They said, well, we've got some new ones out back that we're taking off our product line, and we'll sell them to you cheap. So I thought, whoa, boy. And we got these three plus a 1250-gallon closed-top tank and a 1350-gallon closed-top tank, both of which are at the garden, for $300. And I thought, boy, we're living right today. Yeah, well, you'll never find a deal like that again. So I bought these, and then Master Gardeners bought the two for the garden, and we installed those. Let's go to the next one. This is the latest tank I installed. This was a 1550 that I got a really, I felt a good deal. Anytime you can get a tank like this under for under 50 cents per gallon stored, you're doing well. Yeah. A lot of places will charge much more, but I went down to Hanford to pick this one up, so I had to bring it back on a trailer. Next one. That last one. Go back to that last one, David. This one doesn't have a big roof. This is the roof over my wood pile. It's got a little pipe coming off of there into this bucket, debris bucket. Then I've got a pipe coming down off my fence here. And I've got a, we've got a small swimming pool, like a 12 by 20 swimming pool. And we cover it with plastic during the winter to keep all the leaf debris out of it. But you build up a lot of rainwater on it. So I siphon that off the pool cover, and it goes into this pipe. And I calculated in the average year what I siphon off that pool cover is probably close to 5,000 gallons, which just overflows this like crazy. So that's just another little component of what you can collect in your yard. Yes?
So I don't know if this is correct, but it seems somebody was telling me about collecting water, that there's actually regulations about collecting water, and that you don't own it because it lands on your roof. It's not really yours. It belongs to the watershed.
That's what people have been saying for years.
Is that true?
The state of California changed their regs, and they say you can collect all the rainwater you want.
Oh.
There are still states. I think somebody told me that Oregon still won't let you do that. Is it Colorado too? And I thought, boy, is that stupid or what?
Yeah.
Because if you don't collect it, use it, it's just going to go down the gutter and through the culvert and down the creek and out to the ocean. It's dumb. So, but, you know, that's the case of, you know, we're dealing with local regulators, a lot of cases on that, and some people might have it in their...
So California does not have a thing like that?
No, you can collect it. And I found out about that law about 10 years after we started collecting rainwater. Heck with it.
I think it has to do with in your corporate yard. Entities. I know that Bechtel, based in San Francisco, tried to stop that. It's happened in other countries. It's an attempt to get people to use privatized water.
Yeah. Might be a lot of politics involved in it.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one. This is a connection that I have at my house. This is the end of my drip system. That's got about 250 drips on it, and I put this on the end of it, and this is all it is. It's a it's a hose bib connection right here with a little coarse screen in it, and then it goes through the Y filter, and then this end goes into the drip system. So when I want to take water from a tank and I want to put it back through my drip system, I know that there's going to be some fine debris in it. And in these open top tanks, or the tanks that aren't painted, the light colored tanks, there's going to be some algae buildup in there. So the coarse stuff will be taken out by the screen. The algae will be taken out by the 10 micron filter in here. And I can feed back through my drip system and run it for an hour. Yes?
Just the pressure and the weight of the water is enough to do all those heads?
No, I'm sorry. I should have told you I have to pump it.
Okay.
Yeah, I pump it through a garden hose.
Though. Okay.
I throw I've got two little irrigation pumps. One's a 1/6 horsepower and one's a 1/3 horsepower, and either one of them will do it. But the 1/3 horsepower, of course, works a lot better. It gives you a lot more pressure in a big drip system area. Next slide. This is where up at Casina Garden, right behind the garden fence. This is the site. Let's go to the next slide. Where we put a actually talked to the school. There used to be a carpentry class for kids, Casina High School. And so the instructor offered, he found out what we wanted to do here by siting some rainwater tanks there to demonstrate to the public what you could do. And he said, oh heck, I'll have my kids form it, and then I know I can get one of the concrete guys to bring down a load, and it'll cost us nothing. And then we've got a bunch of steel posts, and the school had some surplus fencing, so we put that around it. These are the tanks we put in, and then we started putting pipes in down off the gutters. Next slide. And here's the pipes coming off the gutters. Next slide. And here's where they connect, and they go into a debris bucket, and then here's an overflow pipe. So we've got two tanks that are tied together on the bottom, and they'll fill together. The only problem is I think the school did come and clean our gutters out for us because they're full yesterday. So that helps. Next slide. Yeah, and here's the connection on the bottom. We've got a valve on each tank, which are always open, and this one is sometimes open, sometimes closed, depending on when we want to use it. These are up high enough in the garden so we can feed by gravity down to hoses only. We don't feed into our drip system. Because if we feed into our drip system, that drip system is also connected to public water. And then we'd have to have a backflow preventer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we didn't want to go to that complication and expense. Now I'm already on a well, as well as public water, and so I had to have a backflow preventer anyway. So all I'm not pumping back into the house system anyway. So, but next slide. And then this is a little closer view of the pipes draining into the debris bucket. Next one. And this is the fence we put around it, and we had to lock the gate because while the kids were in their woodworking class there, we didn't want to let them get close enough to the tank with a cordless drill or some other little implement that they could create a little havoc. But fortunately, we hadn't had to put that to that. Next one. This is the finished product, yeah. And these tanks were about midpoint in the tank, were about 11 feet above the hose bibs in the garden, so it gives us just by gravity about 4.5 pounds pressure at the hose. So if we, in the springtime, if it's been dry for a while, we want to water the fruit trees and we're up there weeding or doing something else, we could just keep moving a couple of hoses every 5 or 10 minutes around these fruit trees. And we're using rainwater instead of public water. That's the main thing, the main message we're trying to get across. Again, next slide. And this is, I put a couple of these old cherry barrels that I got from Hearst Ranch in Tuolumne County and Jamestown. I put those in for rainwater collection at our daughter's house. And then I put an overflow on them, and she had a couple of old garbage cans. So when this fills up, it just overflows into that can. Next one. And this shows, you can buy these diverters for your downspouts. And I know Twinehart Plumbing has all the fixtures for doing these water barrels. And Osh used to, but they're closed now. Next one. This is another type of catchment that you can use, just these water troughs for livestock. Those can be used. These 2x2x4, I think they run about $100. So these aren't cheap. And those barrels, those rain barrels, plus the attachments, they cost me $45, plus they probably cost $60 to hook up. So you take the average person that can't afford that kind of thing. Rainwater collection is really tough for people that are really hurting for their next meal, where the next meal is going to come from. And this is the ultimate in cheap water collection under the roof of my shop. But I now have one tank sitting right on this corner. So we have a lot of 5-gallon buckets because we have to maintain our own roads. And a lot of it's crack patching material. So anyway, that's the end of that presentation. Let's see if there's, we're going to get into, I think in the next presentation, probably irrigation systems and rethinking and revising our home irrigation systems. Next slide. We're also going to talk in a few minutes about reducing the amount and size of lawns. Next slide. And also use of drought tolerant plants and a lot of landscaping for trying to catch runoff before it goes off the property. Next slide. These are just some comments that are worth talking about for a minute, talking about the limited availability of water. And we all know about the intense competition between ag, urban, and environmental uses. So when we look at countywide or statewide uses, personal, we'll use what we can. What we can catch, we should. But there's an intense competition, and we see that in communities. The fact that the Metropolitan Water District in Los Angeles and the other outfit actually came up and bought islands in the Delta to try and influence and impact, since they're property owners now, try and impact the positive things that they wanted to do with the twin tunnels. So, you know, you look at all of these things from an engineering standpoint and also a political standpoint, and the competition is, again, really intense. So we have to be aware of that all the time. And all the uses have a place, but smart management of all the water is key, whether it's management of water in our own yards or whether it's county or statewide. And intense pressure exists on the twin tunnels. I'm sure that hasn't gone. They're talking about, well, maybe one tunnel now. We'll see. But there are so many potential problems with engineering, trying to engineer how you're going to get those tunnels underneath the Delta where you might have potential for collapse. That's a serious concern. What are we going to do with the Delta if we take water out above Sacramento? And they're talking about, now, you know, the State Water Board wants to replace that water, of course, from the Stanislaus, the Tuolumne, and the Merced Rivers. That's what's going to fill the hole in the Delta. So it's a lot of it's political anymore. So we have to be aware of that. Next slide. And so that's why I always try to involve, tell people, be involved, be active in your home and garden, and promote water conservation contacts with the public whenever we're talking with them at our demo gardens or wherever. And then vote and be aware of all the local and regional changes to the water systems and how that might affect the local and regional areas as well as us personally. I think that might be it. Trevor?
Yep. Good morning. We're going to talk this morning on grasses and some alternatives to using a lot of water, something that's drought tolerant for your grasses. My name is Pam Emery, and I'm a master gardener. I went through the gardening class in 2016, and the reason I got interested in the grasses mainly was for my own purpose at home. I came to Tuolumne County in 2006 and planted a seed grass in my yard, a tiered yard in the back, and as it becomes more and more obvious that we aren't going to be able to water, I'm looking at alternatives to having a different kind of lawn. So that's what we're going to talk about today. There's annual grasses, which sometimes people plant to fill in for an existing lawn to give them a brown spot or a dead spot. And then there's more of the permanent grass, perennial, live for one season. And these are grasses that we have some of the examples here in the garden. We have the buffalo grass, the fescue, and we have the needle grass, yeah. So I have some handouts here of the care and how these different types of grasses might work into your garden. If you're interested, I can pass these around. There's different kinds of grasses, obviously, and there's an old garden rhyme that says, sedges have edges, rushes are round, grasses are hollow that rush all around. So there's different types of grasses, and depending on what your landscapes want, what you want it to look like. And we have, like I said, examples of the bent grass sometimes is used in golf courses, and it can be cut, you know, to look like a green lawn. The buffalo grass it goes dormant in the winter, so you have to be aware of that, but it takes a lot less water and care. The typical turf grass uses about 5,600 gallons of water per month per 1,000 square feet of lawn. That's a 20 by 50 area. So that's about 20,000 gallons plus of water for summer season. So we just don't have that kind of water anymore that we can put into that kind of grass. So that's one of the reasons I started looking at the different types of ground cover. We have another kind of grass also that's called like the bunch grass or the sedge mounding type grass, and sometimes that's considered kind of an ornamental look, but you can put them together to make more of a green space. You know, it takes a while to work to grow together, but eventually, you know, you'll get a nice green area. There's some like the Kentucky bluegrass is an example of runners, and that's kind of difficult to contain, though, so you have to really want to have that kind of grass. And then we have a lot of examples here in the garden of the ornamental grasses, which can be used as accent pieces and also in a rock garden type setting. So over where they're having the plant sale right now, behind that is the area that has the meadow and the grasses, and that has examples that you can see them actually growing. The buffalo grass is right on the other side of this trellis here, and then the bent grass is in front of that first garden area, and that's really long right now, but it can be mowed. That's called bent grass. So is there anything that anyone is particularly interested in that they're looking to put in their yards? Or and the ornamentals, they do well with a drip system as far as the watering, so that definitely keeps your water use down. There's some books up here that you can look at while you're here at the garden that has a lot of information on the grasses. And we have some handouts here too to talk about the replacing the trees and what to do with your garden or landscaping.